This insert is brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.
Welcome to our program, Community Matters on K Pulpit. My guest today is Erica de Tooy. She's from the Western Cape Association of and for Persons with Disabilities, and we are going to look at disability issues and infrastructures and how the society, including persons with disabilities, can benefit from these structures. Welcome with us, Erica.
Thank you, Fani. It's always lovely to visit you and Radio Pulpit.
First, tell us more about yourself and then a little bit more about the Association of and for Persons with Disabilities here in the Western Cape.
Yes, so I don't have a disability as such. I have a few impairments, but not anything close to disabling. I've been with Western Cape APD for a long time, and my passion is around disability. I have disability in my family, and my husband has a disability. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I grew up with and that I still live with today. In terms of the organization, we are the largest non-profit organization that provides social work services to persons with disabilities in the Western Cape. We ourselves are a provincial office, but we have 22 branches across the province, also including rural areas, who provide those direct services to persons with disabilities. And then our function is then to make sure the branches have the capacity, the training, the knowledge and the skills to provide those services. So we play an oversight role in their governance, in their administration, and a lot of training on various aspects of disability, on literally how do you run an effective NPO.
Yeah.
And so in a nutshell, that's what we do.
And you refer to training. It's important to share with us some of the training programs you have available. I know that sensitization training is very important to you. Can you share with us what type of training is available?
Yes. So in terms of what I do at the organization around awareness raising, we do run sensitization training sessions with mainly corporates, but open to anybody. And those sessions are aimed at really telling people more about the impact of disability on the individual and on their family and on their community, and really giving practical tips on how to interact with people with disabilities. We sometimes forget, those of us who work in the sector, that not everybody has as much exposure to disability that we do. And so this is really showing people how to communicate with someone who can't hear you, or how to behave around someone that can't see you. That's what those are around. I also do a lot of training with what we call peer supporters, which are people with disabilities who have been rehabilitated, want to give back to their communities, who live in those communities, and I train them up in terms of awareness raising to do what I do, to speak to the public, to empower people, to really be that support to our branch social workers.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know, and you know, that the challenges in the rural areas is access to transport, and also in our bigger cities. But we're going to discuss today public transport. We're going to look at accessible parking bays and spaces and beach permits, a lot of things that we're going to discuss today and unpack today. But Erica, we're first going to break for music, and I will continue talking to you, Erica de Tooy. Stay tuned.
From the Cape, for the Cape, and beyond. Cape Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m.
Welcome to our program, Community Matters. And my guest today is Erica de Tooy, and she's from the Association of and for Persons with Disabilities in the Western Cape. And we're going to discuss a few topics in connection with the empowerment of persons with disability. Erica, let's start off with transport. Transport is something that many of us take for granted. We know it, especially those of us with our own private transport, and transport also affects persons with disabilities, persons who have impairment. Are South African public transport systems currently accessible for all various types of impairments?
Finally, the very short answer is yes and no. So in large cities like Cape Town, Johannesburg, public transport is largely accessible. For example, in Cape Town, where I live, we have the MyCity bus system that is accessible for most people with disabilities. And we also have the blue EMU trains that are accessible. But again, for those trains, a lot of the station platforms aren't accessible. So the trains are fantastic, but not always the environment in which they operate. In Gauteng, we know there is the Gautrain, and other provinces have similar transport systems to Cape Town's MyCity. But apparently those had not as much success as MyCity has had. But unfortunately, in rural areas, there is little to no public transport. And the little transport that there is oftentimes not accessible at all. So it's really a wide range of what is available and what is accessible.
Yeah, that's shocking. But that's reality. But there were two recent incidents, if I may call it like that, on public transport in Cape Town that caused a bit of a stir. Tell us more about them.
Yes, so the first one was the Golden Arrow Bus Service, who purchased 200 electrical buses, which sounds fantastic, but then we heard that they are absolutely not accessible to people with disabilities, not wheelchair users. And the other was a decision by the City of Cape Town to reduce the dial-a-ride service. For those who don't know about dial-a-ride, it is a door-to-door specialist service for persons with disabilities that was established, 21, 22 years ago.
Yeah.
As an accessible option for people with disabilities because the public transport wasn't accessible. So over the years, people have really begun to rely on that as transport. And the city took a decision to reduce that service to only people who needed it to go to and from work, and also only for wheelchair users. So everybody that was relying on it to get to clinics, to get to schools, to get to universities, even to get to recreation, to do their shopping, was suddenly without transport. And this is something that the Western Cape Network on Disabilities took up, spoke to the city, arranged a protest, took it to the courts, and managed to get that decision not actually reversed, but put aside until it could be reviewed properly. So I represent Western Cape APD on the network. I serve on their executive committee. So I've kind of been there where it's all happening. And it really was met by an outcry by people with disabilities because suddenly they couldn't leave their homes.
Yeah.
They couldn't get to hospital. We've heard stories of people losing their jobs because they couldn't get to work.
Sure.
People that have become really ill because they couldn't get to their clinic appointments on time. So it's got a tremendous impact. But in our opinion, it remains the government's responsibility to provide accessible transport for everybody, for all South Africans. And so it's a huge challenge.
Your organization, the APD Western Cape, is also affiliated to the National Council, often for persons with disabilities. You're also working close with them, is that so?
That's correct, yes.
So you play a part in accessibility as well on a national level, if I'm correct?
That's correct, although in that capacity, I focus mainly on people with hearing impairments, those who don't use a sign language. And that, of course, is there are a whole lot of other needs that come into play terms of public transport.
That's true, because this is my next question, is if we look at transport more practically, when we think about accessible transport, and people say accessible transport, we usually think of wheelchair users, and that you already mentioned now other impairments as well. But does that also include persons with other impairments, or we have other impairments?
Yes, absolutely. You're correct. When we speak of accessibility, the example that's always given is someone using a wheelchair.
Yeah.
But it's important to know that people with all kinds of impairments use public transport. So, you know, if you think of where do people find the information, the bus timetables, is it on a website? Is the website accessible to screen readers for people with visual impairment? If there are, for example, announcements on buses, on trains, how does someone with a hearing impairment hear that?
Yeah.
Or is it also in a visual signage, or often they use LED signs with rolling text. So even online videos, you know, what I think the golden rule is whatever is visual must also be audible, and vice versa, whatever is audible must also be visible. So, you know, the charts of the routes that the bus or the train is going to take must be accessible for people with those hearing disabilities, with visual impairments, for people with dyslexia who perhaps can't read them or struggle to read however it is presented. And that's just kind of typical public transport. If we look at the e-hailing services, there are some that are accessible for wheelchairs, and there are wonderful stories of of drivers that have really gone out of their way to help the passenger. I've seen it myself. But other times I've heard stories of someone with a guide dog being left on the pavement waiting because the e-hailing driver has seen the dog and has gone, no, not me. And left the person standing, or they don't understand, they're not patient enough to communicate with someone that can't necessarily hear what they say.
Absolutely.
So it really is a much wider issue than just wheelchair users.
It's
those people with communication difficulties.
Yeah, more than just that, and that's about the impairment that I refer to. The diversity of impairments must be respected when we think about accessible transportation. Erica, it's now time for us for music, and then I will continue talking to you. Erica de Toey from the Western Cape Association of and for Persons with Disabilities. Stay tuned.
Passion for purpose and people. Cape Pulpit, 729 AM. From the word to your heart.
Welcome to our program, Community Matters. My guest is Erica de Toey from the Association of and for Persons with Disabilities in the Western Cape, and we're discussing disability issues, the challenges in terms of transport. But Erica, the next question is about air travel. What is the situation there? Specifically, airports and flights, and how does this look like?
Yeah, so airports are generally reasonably accessible, especially for wheelchair users. And that's mainly because of luggage that has wheels. Although, having said that, the very smooth floor surface is sometimes a challenge for people that use crutches. Some of our airports are now what they call silent airports, which means that there aren't continuous announcements coming out over the loudspeakers, which is great for people with a hearing impairment because everything is visual now.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, it's a challenge for someone with a visual impairment who won't be able to read it but also doesn't get that audio information in.
Yeah.
In terms of boarding the plane, It's reasonably easy for most people. Wheelchair users use the passenger aid unit to board the plane. But there are, again, sometimes times when the personnel aren't sensitive to the person's needs, but also to the wheelchair. And I've also heard stories of wheelchairs being damaged, for motorized wheelchairs that use a battery, that the acid has run out of the battery because the wheelchair has been put into the hold on its side. So there are still horror stories that happen. But in general, it isn't really that bad. Oftentimes people, you know, I've traveled with blind colleagues before, and that's fairly easy. As long as they have a sighted guide, it is fine. But, you know, the airways personnel are also supposed to help someone if they don't have a sighted guide. That's called assisted travel. It has to be booked beforehand, but it is definitely possible.
Erica, all these things that we discuss now, I assume that those of these issues, it's not in place. What is the way forward? What must happen to ensure that transport at the end is accessible for all users with all different impairments?
Sonny, I think it has to do a lot with consultation and collaboration, particularly with people with disabilities themselves and organizations like ourselves that work in the sector and that have the knowledge required to make sure that these transport systems are accessible. Oftentimes we come across the reason that there is no funding in the budget, and that is not a good excuse. Funding needs to be made available in the budget. And right from the design stage of anything, of any environment, of any transport system, it must automatically include accessibilities for everybody. And then, of course, everything that exists currently that is not accessible needs to be made accessible in a phased approach. So, you know, as a sector, we absolutely understand that it might cost quite a bit of money, but there are small things that can be done that don't cost a lot. And for those that do require extra funding, obviously, as I say, that needs to be included in budgets.
So there's a long way, but in terms of respecting diversity is important. And also, persons with impairments are disabled by society, because disability is imposed. Disability is imposed on persons with impairments if that issue is not sorted out, if there's no accessible transportation, whatever it might be. So it's so important for the work that you are doing to tackle these issues, Erica, at the Western Cape Network, as well as the APD Western Cape, well as the National Council often for persons with disabilities. My next question is about accessible parking spaces. We see a lot of public abusing of accessible parking spaces. What does an accessible parking space look like, and why does it exist?
Yes, Bonnie, these parking bays is always a touchy subject when we speak to the public. They are a specific bay is put aside for motorists with a severe mobility impairment. They are much wider than an ordinary bay. They must be at least 3.5 meters wide. And they are clearly indicated as accessible bays. Normally, there is a painted yellow marking on the tar, and there is signage indicating that it's a accessible bay. It is according to the building regulations, these bays must be within 50 meters of an accessible entrance to whichever building. But the bays are also legislated under the Official Road Traffic Signs Act. So it is a legislative requirement for all public spaces.
You know, but why is it so that it must be close to the entrance?
So what happens is that someone with a spinal cord injury often cannot regulate their body temperature above the level of their injury. Mm-hmm. So in extremely hot weather, they can't sweat. In other words, they can't cool their body down.
Yeah.
And the sooner they can get into the shade, the better. Again, for adverse weather conditions, if it's pouring with rain, by the time they get their wheelchair out of the vehicle and set up next to them, the wheelchair is sopping wet. And then they have to sit on a wet wheelchair. So you'll also find that most times these are under some kind of roof, that there is that protection from the elements.
Mm.
I've heard lots of people say they want to use the bays because it's close to the entrance and it's convenient, and people with disabilities just don't want to walk like the rest of them.
Yeah.
But there are really health reasons why those bays are situated exactly where they are.
But do you think it's a lack of understanding, a sensitivity issue, that people still carry on abusing this parking spaces?
I would like to think that it really is a case that people don't understand why they are there. It's not about comfort. It's not about convenience. It's about that right to access a public building on an equal basis as anybody else. So if you just imagine if that bay was occupied by someone who didn't need it, then the person needs to use an ordinary bay, which is not wide enough, which means as soon as they park, they cannot open the door wide enough without damaging the car next to them.
Yeah.
I've also been told, especially for people with elderly parents that use wheelchairs, that why can't you drop your mother at the entrance and then go and park the car somewhere else?
Yeah.
And that's a problem because the person is then unprotected.
Yeah.
They are completely, in the case of an elderly person, you know, they are absolutely vulnerable. When my mom was still alive, I used to go and park somewhere else.
Yes.
But then I chose an area of the parking that had no other cars. So it was easy to get her out. But then when you come back in again, it's really, really busy.
Yeah.
And there's no parking available. So then you have to reverse the car into where everybody's driving just so that I can get her in.
Yeah.
Because the accessible bays were being used by people who didn't need them.
That's important for people to understand. But Erica, it's time for music, and then I'll continue talking to Erica Retoe from the Association of For Persons with Disabilities in the Western Cape about disability and accessibility. Stay tuned.
Keep your feet tapping and your hope rising all day, every day. Cape Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. From the Word to your Heart.
Welcome to our program, Community Matters at Cape Pulpit. My guest is Erica Retoe of the Association of and For Persons with Disabilities in the Western Cape, and we discuss disability issues, accessibility, and how the community can benefit from equal access. Erica, we discussed the issue of accessible parking, but my question is, how can listeners who do need a parking this den get one to get access, these people that you need it?
Yes, so those discs are available at traffic departments. So listeners can just go to their local traffic department to get the application form. You have to also, besides that form, you have to have a letter from a occupational therapist or a doctor that recommends that you need that disc. And then you take that along with two ID photos, your ID book or your ID card, and normally about R100, and hand that back into the traffic department, and they will issue the disc, which I need to just mention is attached to the person and not the vehicle. So if you are taken shopping by various people, you can use that disc on any of the cars that you go in.
Yes, so your person can benefit from that, the person who need access, and accessibility and parking bays is actually Independence. Is that right?
Correct.
That's
absolutely
good.
Correct.
That's nice. Erica, next question from our side is beach permits. Now, these are less well-known if you compare it with parking discs. But please explain to us, what is the issue of beach permits? Who can apply for it and in what circumstances?
Yes, sure. So beach permits essentially is a permit that gives the person permission to drive their vehicle in a coastal zone on a beach area. Normally, you know, the general public aren't allowed to drive vehicles on the beach sand. But this is, again, for people with a severe mobility impairment who are not able to get onto the sand without using their vehicle. It's a special permit that has to be applied for through the government department of environmental affairs, I think it is. And again, it's attached to the person, and it's also attached to a specific beach. So you cannot take a permit and go and visit just any beach. You've got to visit the beach that the permit is approved for.
Now, you said who can qualify for that?
So that, again, is only persons with a severe mobility impairment. And the key word here is severe.
Severe.
So people with, yes. So often we've had people with emphysema, perhaps, who say they need to get onto the beach, but they can't walk that far. And unfortunately, it is not for people with emphysema. It's not for people with a little bit of backache. It is actually for people with a mobility impairment that needs a wheelchair or a walker, that really physically cannot get over the dunes onto the sand without using a vehicle.
Yeah.
This has been abused actually in the past, and we've been forced by the department to be a lot stricter on who actually gets these permits.
Thank you for that answer. Erica, there's a question. One of the listeners want to know more about importation of adapted vehicles. Now, they say there's a levy on the importation of accessible vehicles for persons with disabilities. What exactly is this, and why and where is it available?
Yes, so this is a concession, really, from the government for people with a mobility impairment. It seems as if there's all these concessions for mobility impairment. But when you need to purchase a car and there isn't a local vehicle available that suits your needs, and you are forced to import a vehicle, then the government will give you a rebate on the customs duty of that vehicle, because you wouldn't necessarily have imported it if it wasn't for your physical needs. So it is really the government saying, we will help you to purchase that vehicle so that you can be independent.
The criteria, can you share this with us?
Yes, sure. So there are two criteria, or two categories, actually. One is people that drive themselves. This is usually people with paraplegia that are paralyzed from the waist down. And then there is a category for people who need to be driven around, which is usually people that have to sit in their wheelchair in the back of the vehicle. They've got different criteria, but essentially both must be automatic vehicles, and there must be certain adaptations made to those vehicles in order for those people to drive them. There's quite a few. So I won't go into all the specific criteria.
Yes.
But, you know, we can certainly send listeners the application forms if they would be interested.
Yeah, yeah. Your contact particulars will be available at the end of our discussion. If you can take us quickly through the process of where do you start it and the forms that must be completed, just to summarize.
Yes, so the whole process starts with the person themselves. They need to find a vehicle that suits their needs. They may not buy any vehicle off a showroom floor. they first have to go through this process of application. And once the rebate certificate has been approved and has been issued to them, then they physically buy the vehicle, which then has to be imported. I always say kind of with their name on it. So it's got to be imported specifically for them.
Yes.
And once they find a vehicle or a make and a model that they like, then they will contact us. We will send them all the forms, the application form. There's a medical report.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of attachments that they need to do. And then as soon as that's complete, then they can send it back to us and we facilitate that application process through our National Council of Unfor Persons with Disabilities, who then hand deliver it to the department, and the person will then hear directly from the department whether it's been approved or not. Normally they are approved. I think I've only had one or two in the last 20 years that weren't approved, but they really were taking a chance. So, and then as soon as that certificate comes through, then they're able to start the purchase process and what have you. So normally they pay to the dealer, the motor vehicle dealer, they pay the full price of the vehicle, but then they take all the purchase documents, the financing and the rebate certificate to the SA Revenue Services, and they get a percentage back. So whatever was paid for the customs, they will get that money back. So it's different for every vehicle. It depends on which vehicle you purchase and the purchase price, because it's worked out as a percentage of the purchase price of the vehicle.
Very interesting, very interesting.
And that's really how it works.
Yeah, very interesting. If you're interested in importation of adapted vehicles, beach permits, accessible parking spaces, and the issue of public transport, you can go to the Association of Unfor Persons with Disabilities in the Western Cape. Erika Rotoe is the person to contact, and then she can refer you when necessary. Erika, it's now time for us for music, and then I will continue with our discussion. Stay tuned. It's our program Community Matters at Rebel Pulpit. My guest, Erika Rotoe. Erika, we've touched a lot of things in terms of accessibility and public transport, but you've been invited to many places to do an access assessment for persons with disabilities. Give us an idea, what is the process that you follow if you go out to a building or a place to do an access assessment?
Tanya, it starts right at the beginning when you approach the building.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at literally the approach. How easy is it to find the building? We look at the parking area. Is there an accessible parking bay? What does the signage look like? Is the signage easy to understand? When you enter the building, you know, what kind of door? Is it an automatic door? Is it a revolving door? Is that accessible for wheelchair users? Is it accessible for moms with prams and toddlers? What is there an intercom system at the front door? Sometimes there's an intercom where you speak to someone at reception. But what about people with a hearing impairment who perhaps can't hear what the receptionist is saying? How do they gain access? What is it like in reception? Often receptions are these huge cavernous spaces that echo, which again make it difficult for someone that perhaps uses a hearing device. How accessible is the receptionist's attitude when speaking with someone who struggles to communicate, who possibly doesn't speak clearly because of whatever the impairment is? How do the corridors look? How do the doors look? Are the doors easy to open? Is it easy to tell the door from the wall? And is it easy to tell the wall from the passageway? Often everything is white. And if you have very low vision, it's sometimes very difficult to determine where the door is along the wall. We look at not just the passageways, but the lifts, the stairs. Stairs are a tremendous challenge for accessibility. So we look at the rail down the side of the stairs. Is it easy to grasp? Often we find stairs in very dark tiling where you can't tell by looking from above where the step ends and the next one starts.
Yeah.
So there does need to be a contrasting color or a reflective paint on the edge of the stair. And also it must be slip resistant, especially outside staircases when it rains. What else do we look at? It also depends on what the building is. You know, if it's a hotel, we would have to look at the different rooms and the bathrooms. If it's an office building, we would look at the boardrooms, meeting rooms, and so on. How accessible are they to people with a hearing impairment?
Yeah.
Is there a sound system? Is it of reasonable quality?
Yeah.
You know, often I find in office spaces, everything's glass and aluminium. And so on the one side, you will have this wall of glass, which looks great. But then if you have a visual impairment, some people, depending on what condition they have, their eyes might be sensitive to light. So if they sit facing that light, it hurts eyes. So, you know, are there curtains? Are there blinds? Can that glare be minimized? Again, with offices that are made of glass, shall I say.
Erica, sorry to interrupt you there. There's a lot of aspects that we must keep in mind, as we can hear. What is your contact particulars? If people are interested in all these issues that we discussed today, where can people contact you?
I can be emailed on awareness@wcapd.org.za, or people can phone me directly on 021-555-2881. I would say emailing is the best option, though. It'll come directly to me.
Erica, thank you so much for your insights that you shared with us today, and I look forward to speaking with you again at a future opportunity. If you want to make an input in this program, you can email me at fani.dt@mweb.co.za. Until next time, goodbye.
Edikap, Fidikap, en verder. Kaapse Kansel, 729 AM.
Tamatieslaai met feta en pistachios. Hierdie resep is genoeg vir 4 mense. 3 eetlepels pistachios, 500 gram gemengde tamaties, gewone dweegtamaties van verskillende soorte en groottes, 1 eetlepel strooisuiker, sout en varsgemaalde swart peper, 3 eetlepels olie, 1 eetlepel suurlemoensap, 1 handvol vars petersilie gekap, 1 kwart koppie feta kaas vir krummel, petersilie takkies vir garnering. Die metode: verhitte pan droog oormatige hitte en rooster die neute daarin. Roer kort en hou goed dop sodat die neute nie brand nie. Laat dit heeltemal afkoel en kap dit fyn. Sny die groter tamaties in wiggies en skywe verskeidenheid van grootte. Halveer die dwergtamaties. Rangskik die tamaties op 'n mooi slaaibord. Sprinkel die strooisuiker oor en geur met sout en peper. Na smaak. Klits die olie en suurlemoensap saam. Geur met sout en peper en roer die petersilie en halfte van die neute by. Bedruip die tamaties daarmee. Sprinkel die feta kaas en die res van die fyngemaakte neute bo-oor. En garneer met petersilie takkies of 2 as jy so voel. Bedien dit op met saam met 'n hoofmaaltyd en geniet.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 AM. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.